This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary, and we're meeting on February 3rd, 1987 at 3 o'clock p.m. in hearing room 343. This is a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 323 relating to liability, sections 1112, section 1415, section 1617, section 2123, section 8283.
3 p.m., the Senate Committee on Judiciary will come to order. The chair is present. The other members will be arriving. Under our rules, we will proceed with the taking of testimony, and I will look at, we're on Senate, still on Senate Bill 323, and it looks like Kip Lombard is the first witness. We have, come on up, Kip, and Bruce Hamlin here.
Yes, sir.
Okay, have you got... All right, I think you're close enough to the top where we'll be able to get you out of here fairly soon. Any other witnesses who don't live in Salem on any of these matters here today?
We do expect some witnesses on the director's and officer's liability. I don't know that they're here yet.
Well, I want to accommodate anybody who doesn't live in Salem. So if somebody shows up, Kip, from out of town, maybe if they get nervous about the time of the afternoon, let me know, because I don't want to. If I carry over anybody, I want to carry over local people.
Fine.
Sally, you're from Portland?
Okay, this.
Go ahead, Kip.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Kip Lombard, representing SEALS, the Citizens Initiative for Equity in the Legal System. I brought with me today John Holmes, attorney from Portland, who will be presenting our essential testimony on the issue of non-economic damages.
Mr. Chairman, I've appeared once before. I'm a practicing lawyer in Portland, a member of the firm of Holmes, DeFrank, and Schulte, and I specialize in the defense of civil litigation, which includes automobile accident cases, product liability cases, the defense of real estate agents and brokers, the defense of cities, counties, school districts, that include Gresham, Lake Oswego, Yamhill County, Lane County, the defense of insurance agents and brokers, the defense of hospitals and doctors, and the defense of lawyers. The Citizens Initiative for Equity in the Legal System, I understand, consists over 82 organizations, and I think over representing over 10,000 people. That is a group that is concerned with regard to tort reform in this state. In that regard, I'm pleased to speak in SEAL's behalf with regard to limits on non-economic damages, and specifically with regard to Section 11 of SB 323. Initially, I'd like to say, because having enjoyed sitting here a couple of days and listening to other testimony, I should say that I have a perception that the tort reform problem is not just an insurance problem. And I have heard people refer to it as the insurance crisis or the liability crisis or whatever. And as I speak today, I would like to say at the onset that I don't view it, either personally or professionally, as just an insurance problem. Insurance rates are symptoms of the problem, but it's not a problem for those who do not have insurance, for self-insureds, for nonprofit or captive insurance company, or where there are large deductibles or exclusions from coverage, or where limits have been or will be inadequate to cover large awards, particularly for non-economic damages such as pain and suffering. Now, with regard to some of those other areas, I think you are all aware that there have been a growing and significant number of self-insureds in the state of Oregon, and some of the self-insureds operate in what you call a large or high deductible, where they may self-insure either the first $5,000 or the first $10,000 or the first $20,000 or even up to $200,000 or $300,000, and then have excess insurance above that. The Oregon State Bar has what it calls a professional liability fund, and in 1986, it provided the first $200,000 worth of coverage. This year, it provides the first $300,000 worth of coverage. And the rates have been going up every year, and the lawsuits against lawyers have been going up every year. This year, for the per lawyer in a firm, the basic coverage is $2,000. But if a lawyer or a firm is not comfortable with just the, $300,000 and wants excess insurance, there was only one company in the market, which was Shan Morahan, and then National Union came into the market, so there are only two other additional companies. I'm going to talk about that, excess insurance, and the problem with that, as I think it ties in with a limit on non-economic damages. There's no question but that there has been, in this state and elsewhere, a dramatic increase in the size of verdicts in some areas of tort law and in the settlements that follow the verdicts. Because more is at stake, and this was a point I made the other day in response to a question of Senator Cohen's, the parties to litigation and their attorneys feel compelled to use more resources to prepare for and conduct litigation. And this is not, this is a two-way street. It's not just on the defense side. The plaintiff's lawyers feel compelled to hire more experts. If you have a medical malpractice case, you will see doctors hired on both sides of the case to give their opinion regarding the standard of care. If economic damages are at issue, and they normally are in heavy injury case, you will see an economist hired or an annuitist hired. In products liability, you will see engineers hired. The bigger the case, the more the reason to spend more money, because more is at stake on either side. So with more at stake, the ante goes up, so to speak. Now, according to figures that I looked at just the other day, there are approximately 10 million civil cases filed in all courts in this country annually. The numbers doubled in the last 16 years. In the last 20 years, there is no doubt but that there has been a broadening of the base of tort liability in this state and elsewhere. And let me give you some for instances on that. I practiced for about 21 years. And during that period of time, I have seen the advent of strict liability. It came in, I think, when I was still a clerk over here at the Supreme Court. I think one of the first cases was White versus Staff Jennings. It later has been codified. But so we did away with saying that there had to be negligence or fault in products liability, but we codified later a rule that first came to us by our Supreme Court that allowed recovery, strict liability in tort, that was without negligence. That's a broadening. Now, maybe there's a good reason for that, and I'm not going to argue with that, but that is a broadening of the liability picture. When I first was in practice, and for several years, we had contributory negligence, which meant a plaintiff could not recover if they were negligent at all. We did away with that. The Oregon legislature did away with that with the advent of comparative negligence. With comparative negligence, unless a plaintiff is more at fault, the plaintiff still recovers. That's a broadening of liability. We used to have a guest passenger law. We've done away with that. So we used to not have the Unfair Trade Practices Act. That allowed more cases. We used to have a doctrine of charitable immunity. I think the courts did away with that. So the only point that I would make, in our state and elsewhere, there has been, by the courts, by the lawyers, and by the legislatures, a broadening of the tort liability and a broadening of the cases filed and the amount of the awards. I understand that a study published by the Jury Verdict Research in 1984 indicates that the average personal injury award was 30.49% higher in 1983 than in 1981, and 24.5% higher in 1980 than in 1979. During the period 1974 to 1982, the average yearly increase was 12.79%, which you have to keep in mind, the Consumer Price Index showed an average increase of 9%, so there's not that big a disparity there. However, considering the larger cases, the high stakes or larger cases that I'm referring to, the same source indicates that there were $27 million verdicts during the period of 1962 to 1970. From 1970 to 1977, there were 224 such verdicts. In 1982 alone, there were $251 million verdicts, a number equal to the 15-year period of 1962 to 1977.
Chairman?
Senator Wires.
Have you ever compared that to the number of millionaires in the country in those periods of time?
I have not, Senator.
It's been a lot of comment in the paper recently about that there's been a mushrooming of the latter. You probably noticed that. A lot more millionaires than there used to be?
There may be.
You haven't noticed that in the paper?
I haven't noticed that, but I mean, there very well may be that.
What about Oregon's experience?
I don't have the figures on that. I know that there's been an increase in cases filed, and I can get figures, and I would be glad to. I'm talking in broad principles because we're asked to compare other states, and I want to compare a couple other states.
I would like, when you could, to find out
All right.
what's going on here.
Okay, I'll be glad
thank
to.
Thank you.
Now, during this same period of time, My point, incidentally, Senator Hill, by giving you these figures, I am not going to enter into a broad criticism of the broadening of liability or people's right to recover. I think that there have been policy reasons, and what I would like, my comments will focus on this. I think there have been policy reasons for broadening some areas of liability. I think there are also policy reasons for making it more financially realistic for everyone. So my point is to not go through and criticize strict liability and tort, comparative negligence. That's another way to attack the problem, by the way, but that's not the way that I'm going to suggest to this committee.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
During this same period of time, just as a little analogy, the national debt has grown dramatically in our country, particularly in the last 5 years. Now, I happen to be a Democrat, and I'm not saying that to criticize this president, because many of the things he's done, I think, are very positive toward business. But the national debt, which was the thing that he said he was going to attack, and in which maybe it is being attacked right now, we've all seen has grown dramatically in the last 5 years. It had grown at a steadier rate, but had grown consistently during the last 25 years. Now, with regard to the national debt, much of that debt has been accumulated over expenditures for what I would consider worthwhile causes. Some that I would disagree, some that others would disagree with. The question is not about the worthwhile causes, and to me, the tort system, it's not about the worthwhile causes of allowing an injured party to sue a wrongdoer. But the question is whether or not society can continue to afford, with regard to the national debt, whether or not that debt threatens a bankruptcy of attempting to achieve the proper and worthwhile governmental goals, or whether it's a good idea. With regard to our tort system, the question is whether or not society can continue to afford to pay unlimited amounts for non-economic damages and generally continue to support a tort system that, by anyone's admission, the plaintiff's attorneys or anyone else's, does not solve all problems, does not award damages to all victims, is expensive and cumbersome to operate, is often uncomfortable, embarrassing, and demeaning to the party sued, and in my judgment, is currently failing to operate in a practical manner to achieve its proper purpose. Now, I enjoyed sitting here the other day and listening to the other side of this argument, listening to the three plaintiff's lawyers.
Senator Wires,
I hate to pick away at you here, but
did you really intend to only mention the demeaning to the people who are being sued?
Well, I didn't, but it's a judgment call I have made. I represent those people, Senator.
Tough on the people who are making the claim.
Of course it's tough on people making a claim, and I should point out, as my friend Lionel Valour did the other day, I've represented those people too. And I would say the same thing that my friend Charlie Burt said, that it's a tough business. It's a difficult business. It's no fun for either side.
So the reason you didn't mention that it's tough for both sides is that you're here representing only one side. It wasn't because you don't feel for both sides. I understand. Maybe I'm just picking it.
Well, Senator Wires, if you spent 99% of your time representing defendants, I would feel that you'd be more qualified to say how they feel. And that's sort of why I'm talking about how they feel.
Sides when you're here, even though you are.
Yeah. I was interested in Mr. Burt's comment that he's in private business, and he was talking about a restaurant and a bar that he owned, and then he said that his rates hadn't gone up and they included liquor liability, and he owned them, but then he said it was in the, I can't remember, it was the Fiji Islands or Tahiti or somewhere, it wasn't around here, and I didn't know what that had to do with anything.
Actually, the bar that he owns is here in Salem.
Oh, is it?
Indeed.
Okay, all right. I
don't think Charlie Burke could afford to go to Tahiti, especially to open a bar.
Well, I have always enjoyed Charlie, and I enjoy having cases with him, and I was amused by the story. I noted that he did not comment, and I alluded to it earlier, because I have what is not a large firm, but I have a 13 lawyer, I guess it's 14 lawyer now, but it was 13 lawyer at the start of the year, 32 employees, and so I get concerned about the premiums that we pay for our liability insurance. Now, I've lectured, I've done work for the Professional Liability Fund, and I've lectured in this last year and in the year before and written on the expanded liability of lawyer and on how to prevent legal malpractice, but that doesn't cut it when I go to my excess insurer and say I'd like a nice rate. Because there's only one excess insurer that was writing, and then there were two, and the rates that they offered me for the same coverage that I had last year had a 54% increase in them. And so what it was is that it was $2,000 per lawyer in my firm for the first $300,000 of liability coverage, but that for the for a $2 million excess policy, it would be an additional $3,823 per lawyer, so that what they wanted was a total of $70,200 for my firm. Now, that's a lot of money.
Is there anything that tell the committee regarding Senate Bill 323 or anything that ought to be in a similar bill that you think would bring down those rates that you're concerned about?
Yes. Yeah, I'll get to that here. Now, I guess the point that I would make is that while I enjoy and I like having cases with all three of those gentlemen, and I know Bill Gaylord too, and I've had cases with him and one just in the last couple of months, is that I do not agree with their opinions, and neither does the public. And I agree, and some of it is against the lawyers, that includes me, but I generally agree with public opinion polls that have been taken in the state of Washington and here, and I brought copies that I'll leave for the committee, that show that the overwhelming majority of the people favored tort reform. In Washington, by a 2-to-1 margin, 61% to 32%, and the residents of that state favored putting a $250,000 ceiling on non-economic damages and death and injury suits, And in Oregon, 81% of the people felt that reform is needed in the system of awarding money. 77% in Oregon that the dollar amounts awarded in lawsuits are usually excessively large, while only 15% disagreed with that statement. And 64% thought that people who win lawsuits are usually awarded much more than they need just for their injuries and court costs. 71% of the people, this is the Moore research thing, and I'll give you copies if you don't already have it. 71% of the people polled in Oregon supported placing a limit on the amount which can be awarded in these lawsuits.
Senator Cohen.
I'm much more interested in exploring with you how we get a handle on, you were talking about the lawyers. We heard a lot of talk about blackmailing. One lawyer says, hey, I'm going to be sued if I don't file. I'm going to be sued if I don't deal with the punitive damages. I'm going to be sued if I don't take this case through to a trial, and if I settle early, et cetera, et cetera. I'm much more interested in how we get a hold of the whole interaction between lawyers and regulating lawyers' practices, if you will, then looking at we're going to regulate the insurance company's practices, and I'm interested in regulating lawyers' practices as well. I understand about publicity, about polls, and I think if the public had been given a range of what the actual settlements were in certain kinds of cases, unless I can see the question to see the framework of what the public agreed to, it doesn't really mean very much. So I'm much more interested in your response to my concern about how we regulate lawyers' practice and how we can get involved in sort of stopping this this continual extension from both the plaintiff and the defense side of sort of escalating the price or the payoff in the end.
It's a good question, Senator. It's a complicated question. Let me tell you a couple things that I don't think you do. First of all, I don't think you do away with the contingent fee or regulate it. I don't agree with that. Maybe Seals does or someone else does. I agree with the plaintiff's attorney's argument that the contingent fee is the key to the courthouse. Now, one of the ways that you could regulate that which lawyers do is to go through all of the enactments, legislative, and take a look at all of the court decisions that have been broadening liability from the 1960s on, and take them on one by one so that you don't have such a broadened basis of liability. That's another thing that could be done. I don't recommend that, but that's something that a legislature could consider. There's another thing that you could do, and that relates to discovery abuse. And in the area of discovery abuse, we are in complete agreement with the plaintiff's attorneys, and as a matter of fact, the American Bar Association just recently commended and adopted the joint statement of principles that the OADC and the OTLA people came out with 3 years ago, which a year ago Chief Justice Peterson sent out and urged that it be mandatory, where we exchange things freely and voluntarily without the filing of motions, etc., which works. It works with professionalism. It doesn't when we don't have professionalism. We have lots of attorneys. We have some bad eggs in every batch, in every type of an organization that you can have. Some of that is working. We have alternative dispute resolution in Oregon, which I support and have spoken on. We have three kinds of it. We have a kind in Multnomah County that works. We have the increased use of settlement judges and settlement conferences, which I support, and which I attended a judicial conference with the education of our circuit judges on last year. Those are some of the things that you can do that interrelate. Now, there's a broader question, though. The overall problem of the cost, there's another way than taking it on one by one. And the way other than taking it on one by one, and I don't mean to bore you or take too long, I I waited a long time to get here, and so maybe I had a lot of things I wanted to say. I don't mean to take too long, but I am going to tell you that I think there is a definite economic effect, and that there is a definite economic effect in response to your question that would either lessen the filing of something that I would consider to be a frivolous lawsuit and so forth, and that relates to Section 11 of your bill, which relates to some sort of a limit on non-economic damages. And that would be the final part of the response that I would make to it.
Have you been around when the testimony of the Chief Justice before the task force was summarized by me or not?
I have not.
He's practically contemporary of yours. I would assume he's probably approximately maybe 2 or 3 years longer than you have. And certainly, as you well know, spent most of those years as an insurance defense lawyer, 17 of them, as I recall his testimony, and approximately, and he told the interim task force that he has seen no evidence in Oregon of excessive jury verdicts or so-called runaway juries in all those years. That's the viewpoint that he has of the system. So naturally, we all wait for some good examples of what people claim to be excessive verdicts or runaway juries or. If there is indeed something wrong with the jury system in Oregon, it should be reflected somewhere in a real life case, and I know that's what I'd like to see some of.
Well, part of the things they say, are you a trial lawyer? And you say yes. And they say, well, does that mean you spend all your time in a court? And you say no. And they say, well, why is that? And they say, well, over 90% of all the cases that you're preparing and you're getting ready for trial settle somewhere along the way. And one of the things that they settle on are the value that you have to get in your head as a lawyer that somehow is actuarially sound based upon verdicts. And they aren't just verdicts in the state of Oregon. So I settled a week ago a wrongful death case for $250,000 in which the plaintiff's lawyer who was doing his job had hired an economist to evaluate the economic value of the replacement of household services, and I don't have any quarrel with that, but it comes up with real high numbers, and who forwarded over to me the ATLA or the OTLA thing where they search all around the country and say, this is worth in this jurisdiction, the verdict came out of Illinois or something for $440,000 or whatever. So their demands are not only governed by what happens in Oregon, although we look at it, and we've had some large verdicts in Oregon, and we've had some large settlements in Oregon. I've had a plaintiff's case in Oregon that we settled for $1 million. I've had a case we settled for $750,000. The cases are there.
Senator Hill?
That's what I asked before. What are the cases? You know, how many of them? You give me the numbers.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
I don't have the statistics on that. I will be glad to see what can be developed on that, but I can tell you how I'm getting to where I'm going.
Okay.
Senator Warren.
I heard you say you didn't think we ought to regulate the contingent fee for in plaintiff's cases, and I think I also heard you say that we not only shouldn't do away the contingent fee, but we shouldn't regulate it. I was wondering if what you think of our going more toward the federal court approach in federal cases where attorney fees are allowed, where they apply the lodestar principle, and to consider going away from the contingent fee as it now stands as a percentage. I know one of the members of the committee from a couple of sessions ago let me know that the idea of a percentage seemed somehow not good. It was sort of like the lawyer was taking advantage. I think the public has a lot of discomfort with that. And it seems to me that it might be a lot more understandable to the public and maybe not only appear fair but be more fair if at the conclusion of a trial to have an attorney fee hearing as frequently occurs already, and have, as I think, this is not something I personally engaged in, but I think it's discoverable at that stage what the defense has been paid or is billed, and have that as part of the basis, make some comparison to what the defense attorney is being paid, and then add to it some factor for the risk taken of not getting paid anything if it was lost. Don't you think that might bring about more of an appearance and perhaps actual fairness in the matter? I guess what I'm getting at here is that a lot of the reason that this whole thing escalates is you just mentioned that the plaintiff's attorney used Nikonovs and so on. You also mentioned the size of your staff, and I'm sure you also have a very fine printer in your office, so you can generate the best and fully copious to your desires within the realms of professionalism pleadings, and requests for production, that sort of thing. Shouldn't that cost be brought forward and made a part of the record at the trial, after the trial, not after, after the trial, and some comparison to those costs be generated into the plaintiff's attorney fee, rather than this really, I think, rather crude business of one-third or one-quarter or something like that?
No, I don't agree.
Okay. Were you through, Senator?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we're going to be here a little longer.